Thank you, Jonga, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Monday, November 2nd, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Tensions continue to rise between ZANU-PF and MDC-T supporters in Hopely, Harare South, following violence that erupted yesterday over a rally venue.
Spilling over to today, there are rally battles where ZANU-PF attacks armed with stones, sticks, machetes and all sorts of assorted weapons are still attacking our supporters.
A former MDCT councillor in Chinoy is arraigned before the courts for allegedly insulting President Mugabe after his near fall in India last week.
The charge is basically meant to thwart any criticisms to the president.
And divisions are widening in the group of expelled ZANU-PF members as former Vice President Joyce Mujuru dithers on launching her political party.
You must work to also be in power, not to be going on Facebook and WhatsApp and think your membership is there. You must work, you must put proper structures, not speculative structures, and dream.
These and much more coming up. Stay tuned.
Tensions continue to rise between ZANU-PF and MDC-T supporters in Hopely, Harare South, following violence that erupted yesterday as both parties tried to use the same venue for their political meetings. The MDC-T says scores of its members were injured, while some have been hospitalized after 2 days of clashes with ZANU-PF supporters in the constituency. Party spokesman Obed Gutu says his party was given a green light by the police to hold a provincial rally in the area yesterday, but adds they were surprised to find ZANU-PF supporters already gathered at the venue, triggering running battles which spilled into today. Gutu tells reporter Jonga Kanzemiri that no one has been arrested so far, but police are hunting down some of their members.
I can actually confirm that spilling over to today, Monday, the 2nd of November 2015. There are running battles where ZANU-PF thugs armed with stones, sticks, machetes and all sorts of assorted weapons are still attacking our supporters within the Hopely area of Harare South constituency. And I actually have information that about seven of our supporters were actually seriously hurt, and they are still detained at a private hospital in Harare as I'm speaking. And what is surprising us is that this is just typical ZANU-PF, following upon Grace Mugabe's utterances a few weeks ago in Mandarin, where he said that no opposition parties should be allowed in areas where ZANU-PF thinks they are dominant. And obviously, as the NDC, would like to voice our deepest regret and concern at the deteriorating security situation.
Have you reported this to the police?
Definitely, the matter has been reported to the police. As usual, we have been reporting these matters where our supporters are victimized, beaten up. We have been reporting ever since the formation of the party. We are very well documented. But what we have always wondered is that the police don't seem to have any appetite of apprehending the ZANU-PF culprits.
That was MDCT spokesman Obed Gutu in Harare with reporter Jonga Kandemiri. Among those injured is a pregnant woman and a seven-year-old child. They are currently being treated at the Avenues Clinic. Studio 7 failed to get ZANU-PF's side on the story as calls to relevant people went unanswered. Meanwhile, a former MDCT councillor in Chinoy, Tendai Musonza, was arraigned before Magistrate Felix Mawadze in Mashonaland West Provincial Capital for allegedly undermining the office of the president by uttering what the state says were derogatory words. Arthur Chigoriwa has more details.
It is the state case that on the 29th of October at Chonde Barbershop in the Chinoy Central Business District, Musonza met a ZANU-PF activist wearing a T-shirt embezzled with President Robert Mugabe's face and told him in Shona, court. Vanhu imi hamungarambe muchitongwa nekamudhara kave nemakore 90 years uye kanoramba kachidonha, which when literally translated means you ZANU-PF people, you still want to be ruled by an old man who is 90 years old and keeps on falling. Musonza is also said to have used unprintable words that the state says demeaned the office of the president. The former MDCT councillor pleaded not guilty and was remanded to the 16th of November on free bail for trial. Lawyer Kudzai Choga said the charge is, quote, undemocratic and meant to suppress freedom of expression.
Yeah, the charge is basically meant to thwart any criticisms to the president.
MDCT spokesperson Obet Gutu said people should not be arrested for commenting on what the president does because he is a public figure. Musonza has been tried under the controversial Criminal Law Codification and the Reform Act, which criminalizes insults on the president. More than 70 Zimbabweans have over the past 5 years been arrested and charged with insulting Mr. Mugabe. The Supreme Court in 2013 had described the controversial insult law, saying it breaches people's rights. But the Constitutional Court had given Vice President and Justice Minister Emmerson Mnangagwa the right to appeal. Mnangagwa subsequently appealed, arguing that the laws must not be revoked since they protect the reputation of the president. Justice Chigausiku previously queried the imposition of 20 years as the maximum prison term for criminal defamation, claiming this would intimidate the public from freely expressing themselves. Reporting for Studio 7 in Shinoi, this is Arthur Chigoriwa.
Divisions are widening in the group comprising expelled ZANU-PF members as former Vice President Joyce Mujuru continues to dither on launching her political party. Feeling cold outside ZANU-PF, some members like former cabinet ministers Nicholas Goche and Webster Shamu have tried to track back to the ruling party, but they have largely been snubbed. Those who have vowed not to rejoin the ruling party are now clashing on the issue of strategy as Zimbabweans eagerly await the launch of the People First. Former Mashonaland West ZANU-PF chairman Themba Mliswa is leading the group, criticizing Mujuru for allegedly failing to show leadership and urging her to allow the youth to lead. But hitting back at Mliswa has been former Masvingo Provincial Affairs Minister Kudakwashe Basigiti, accusing him of working in cohorts with the ZANU-PF faction, allegedly led by Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa. Studio 7's Blessing Zulu spoke with the two. Mliswa says that some of the expelled ZANU-PF members are lying to Mrs. Mujuru.
I've always told them the truth, that my Mujuru is in power because of the president. The 2004 Congress, which was clear that the Vice President Mnangagwa would win, a decision was then made by the president to then get my Mujuru in, which went against a lot of people and so forth. But people accepted because he's the leader of the party and he made that decision. Equally, I challenge those people who call themselves cadres of the party and who work for the president that when the president appointed Vice President Mnangagwa, why did they not also support him the same way that they supported Mayim Juru? Because their circumstances are the same. You know, if you say that Mayim Juru got in unconstitutionally and Mnangagwa unconstitutionally, but you're going to support them, you can see that some of the people who are lying to Mayim Juru right now, like Comrade Basketi, benefited from Mayim Juru by being given government posts, like provincial affairs minister and so forth. I've never been appointed as a minister, so I don't owe my allegiance to anybody. Comrade Mtasa is also my uncle. I respected him with the office that he held and so forth. And for me, you must understand one thing. I am equally a Karanga person. I would also want to see Karanga people doing well. The next president does not have to be Comrade Mnangagwa or the Karanga. Anybody else. Because the struggle was fought by all the tribes. It was not fought by the tribal, the Zulus.
Mr. Basketi?
Just briefly, first and foremost, I don't subscribe to that tribalism and regionalism which Honorable Mliswa is expressing. This is the same reason why the leadership, which was supposed to protect the Ndebele and their leaders, decided to kill them on a regional basis. That's not our ideology. We don't subscribe to any regional tribalistic ideology, as he's speaking of Karanga. Yes, I'm a Karanga more than him. He shares the blood of Karanga and the Zambian. But we are not worried about that. But we are saying even God is not a respecter of regions, and he's not a respecter of regions. God chooses leaders whom he sees the heart. Maem Juru was popularly elected by the people. All the 10 provinces elected there. That's why she was elevated. Comrade Mnangagwa was not elected. He was appointed. So there's a difference between an appointee and an elected person. That's why we are saying, even now going forward, the people elected her for a mandate to run 2018, but she is where she is now. Lastly, I want to correct another wrong notion which is being given. That you see, as we stand behind a Maem Juru, we are not just standing behind her on the fact that she was removed from ZANU-PF, but we are doing it with the full understanding that this is a God-anointed leader.
You must work to also be in power, not to be going on Facebook and WhatsApp and think your membership is there. You must work. You must put proper structures, not speculative structures, and dream. No, he doesn't also ordain leaders who dream and who are not practical. Mnangagwa is ordained by God. So is Mpoko. So is the president. That's the leadership world right now. We work with them. If your chance happens to come, then it will come as well. I think you must understand that.
That was former Mashonaland West ZANU-PF chairman Themba Mliswa in Johannesburg. You also heard from former Masvingo Provincial Affairs Minister Kudakwashe Basikiti in Harare. The two were speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 meter wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up,
the health segment with Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
U.S. President Barack Obama is taking steps today to ease the path of inmates being released from prisons across the country to find new jobs and subsidized housing.
The Vatican arrested a Spanish priest and a laywoman suspected of stealing confidential documents and leaking them to the media. The Holy See acknowledged today.
And senior officials at Metrojet, the Russian charter airline company whose Airbus passenger plane crashed in Egypt, have ruled out any technical failure or human error from the airline, blaming external reasons for the disaster that killed all 224 people aboard. You are listening to Studio 7 coming to you from Washington.
Mental illnesses such as anxiety, depression, and loneliness, which health experts say at times lead to suicide, are said to be on the rise in Zimbabwe due to the prevailing harsh economic conditions. Health experts are therefore calling on the government to prioritize these silent illnesses. Dr. Rutendo Bonde of the Zimbabwe Wellness and Lifestyle Institute says more resources are being allocated to diseases like HIV/AIDS, with very little being done about silent killers like depression. She says public health centers need to be fully equipped so they can deal with mental health issues as more people are getting affected by such illnesses.
Stress has a major factor to trigger depression within Zimbabwe, and we live in a very stressful environment. With that, there is, you know, further breakdown of social networks of support and traditional coping mechanisms and the buddy system, because everybody's caught up in the hustle and the bustle. And as such, you'll find that many people experience despair and hopelessness and have no options to address the solution of life, and they can't see their way through the myriad of the day-to-day problems, and that leads to depression. And with it, depression also becomes a major driver towards suicide.
What are some of the symptoms for depression and stress, and also what are the warning signs that someone may be contemplating committing suicide?
You know, consistently negative projection, speaking out negatively. You may be looking at the same situation for someone else. It's half full, and the person who is depressed will see it as half empty. And persistently negative, social withdrawal, where they were more outgoing family events, they tend to withdraw from those events. Coupled with that will also be some physical symptoms where someone now doesn't have any care for their personal upkeep. You often find somebody unable to dress appropriately for events and look, you know, clean and presentable. Those are some of the early signs of stress and depression.
And should one suspect that their relative or friends are suffering from depression or stress or are contemplating committing suicide, what action should they take?
Get professional help, approach any of the network of doctors which are there in the country. If it's difficult to get to a doctor, get to the nearest health center and explain. As I say this, I then wonder about the preparedness of our public health institutions to address mental health issues.
On that issue, is the public health system in Zimbabwe prepared? Research issue, we look state of the economy and other issues.
The private health care is advancing, you know, in slow steps but progressively. And the public health is actually retrogressing, if anything. And of course, that then puts a burden of unmet need. An increasing number of people who will be unable to find a suitable facility, to find a suitable professional to get support from. And hence, as you rightly say, the increase in suicide cases.
What would you say are the major causes of depression, stress, and eventual suicides in some cases?
It has to do with the perception of the ability of an individual to solve the day-to-day issues and challenges of everyday life. And when a person feels that they are unable to find solutions for everyday life, then that becomes a compounding factor towards depression and towards stress.
And we've seen a lot of people also turning to traditional and spiritual help when they do face such issues. What's your advice regarding that?
My advice is that as professionals who are in the field, we need to maybe reach out to those who are in the religious sector and who are in the traditional sector in order to equip them so that they have the right messages to give. I find that sometimes within those sectors, the religious sector and the traditional sectors, people do get taken advantage of and no real solutions come out without marrying the two, the science and the religion, or the science and the tradition. I think that, you know, that that's clearly a gap in how we are implementing mental health issues.
That was Dr. Rutendo Bonde of the Zimbabwe Wellness and Lifestyle Institute speaking with us from Harare.
Music, poetry, and testimonials marked a weekend event to remember the life of the late renowned poet and novelist Chenjerai Hunzwi as artists, friends, and family members converged at his favorite Queensdale Sports Club Saturday night. Ivan Chifera has more details.
The event to remember one of Zimbabwe's finest writers was marked by music, poetry, and testimonials from family members, friends, and fellow artists of the late award-winning novelist who died in exile in Norway in July. Hove's widow Tekla urged Zimbabweans to take on the literary world, which she said the husband had conquered by playing his part and raising his family well.
And I feel great that my husband left something that people could remember with respect, and they also love him. But he had many friends, he had many colleagues to work with, and he loved people and they love him. They've returned their love to him, like he also planted love.
Hove's children said the huge turnout at the event that was organized by his friends was an indication that their father was indeed a man of the people. The event was organized to celebrate the late prolific writer's local and international contributions to the arts world and his achievements. Javlani Hove said he will always cherish the good times he shared with his father, especially at Queensdale Sports Club, venue of the memorial.
You know, so it was good times growing up with him. We had a good time because it was here at Queensdale Sports Club. We actually had my first drink with him.
Among those in attendance was Zimbabwe Human Rights Association Director Okey Machisa. Machisa said it was befitting for him and many others to pay tribute to Hove, whom he said was one of the founders of ZimRights.
We will cherish his good work that he started at ZimRights, and we continue to cherish that.
He described the late Hove as a fearless human rights defender who inspired many in the country through his literary works. Another author and colleague of the late novelist Dave Mungoshi said it was befitting to have such an event in honor of a writer of Hove's stature. Michael Mabwe said Hove's vision must go on.
Surely you will not be doing justice to yourself if you are a writer or a poet and you have not been in interaction with Chenjerai Hove's works. So we're here to salute his work as a writer.
Artists Konde Mhlanga, Memory Chirere, Hope Masike, and Davis Gujam were among the many people who thronged the sports club for Hove's memorial. The award-winning Hove went into exile in 2001 and succumbed to kidney failure in July in Norway, where he was an International Writers Project Fellow at Brown University Watson International Institute for International Studies. Organizations he worked for include Moto Magazine, the Interpress Service, Zimbabwe Publishing House, and spent some time at the University of Zimbabwe as a writer in residence. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
Thanks, Ivan. Would like to apologize. That event there was a weekend to remember the life of the late renowned poet and novelist Chenjerai Hove, and not Chenjerai Hunzwi.
And in our weekend sports roundup, Michael Cariati tells us about how Harare City Football Club booked their ticket to represent Zimbabwe in the 2016 CAF Confederations Cup.
This follows their unexpected 2-1 win over Dynamos at the National Sports Stadium Saturday. The Sunshine City Boys will be registered with the Confederation of African Football as one of Zimbabwe's two representatives in Pan-African football for the year 2016. The Confederation of African Football had given all national football associations up to November 30 to register their clubs to represent their countries in the CAF Champions League and the CAF Confederation Cup. At the moment, Zimbabwe has one representative in each competition, while others have two due to the poor performance of local clubs in the past 3 years or so in these African competitions. Harare City coach Chaurai Mangwiro is happy that the team finally got some form of silverware after a Chibuku Super Cup campaign that saw them plunder 13 goals in previous three rounds. Mangwiro says the Chibuku Super Cup win could serve as a good omen for the Sunshine City boys for the future ahead.
I have done very well as far as developing players is concerned, but in terms of accolades, there wasn't much. So I hope today's trophy can signal the beginning of good times ahead of my career.
Mangwiro said they are aiming for a higher position in the Kasolaga Premier Soccer League race, in with their seventh on the table.
If we can push even higher so that we finish in a better position than the sixth that we are currently on.
However, Dynamo's coach Tendera Indiraya thinks his team deserved to be in Pan-African football, but is blaming too many missed opportunities for his team's loss.
I thought my team was better in terms of ball possession, in terms of creating opportunities. I thought we were better, but again, the problem we've been bemoaning about, you know, our lack of killing off the chances we are creating. In the first half, I thought we should have scored at least one or two goals. We had so many opportunities, but that didn't happen.
Diraya says from the look of things, Dynamos might end up without anything to show for their effort in 2015.
We will fight to the end. We'll fight to the end. You never know what happens in the last four games, so we are still hopeful. And we just need to go back, look at ourselves, plan, and do the best we can. And hope that the other teams will drop some points and we capitalize.
For their effort, Harare City got $75,000, while Dynamos, as the losing finalist, received $50,000. Action this week returns to the Kasolaga Premier Soccer League. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Michael Cariati.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The death of a mother is the greatest misfortune for a young family. When a woman dies in childbirth, the newborn's own chances of survival diminish tenfold. That child and any siblings are less likely to receive health care and to go to school, and the family as a whole is now more likely to suffer economic hardship. Yet every 2 minutes, another mother dies during pregnancy or childbirth. More than half of the deaths occur in sub-Saharan Africa. That is why in June 2012, the United States and the government of Norway partnered with the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, the private sector initiative Merck for Mothers, and the Every Mother Counts campaign to found the Saving Mothers Giving Life initiative. Saving Mothers Giving Life is a 5-year initiative that seeks to reduce maternal mortality by half and improve health in places where women are dying at alarming rates during pregnancy and childbirth. It was initially implemented in 4 districts each in Uganda and Zambia, with a focus on labor, delivery, and the first 48 hours postpartum, the time period in which some 2/3 of maternal deaths and nearly half of infant deaths occur. Early reports indicated that the program was working, so it was expanded in 2014 to an additional 12 districts in Zambia and another 6 districts in Uganda. Now the program has reached its halfway point, and the results are astonishingly good. In Uganda, the institutional maternal mortality rate has fallen by 45% since the beginning of the initiative, and thanks to a strong training and educational campaign, by 41% at the community level. In Zambia, institutional mortality, meaning in a hospital or clinic, has fallen by 53% in the target districts, and nearly 90% of women are now giving birth in a facility compared to 63% at the outset of the initiative. As a result of this success, the partnership is expanding the program to Nigeria, a country that accounts for 14% of the world's maternal deaths and 1/4 of the world's newborn deaths, with an initial focus on the southeastern state of Cross River. Surviving childbirth should not be a matter of luck or where you live or how much money you have. Together, we are working to make that a reality.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our hosts will lead discussions about rising tensions and political violence in Harare South.
Now to recap on today's top stories.
Tensions continue to rise between ZANU-PF and MDCT supporters in Hopley, Harare South, following violence that erupted yesterday over a rally venue.
A former MDCT councillor in Chinoy is arraigned before the courts for allegedly insulting President Mugabe after his near fall in India last week.
And divisions are widening in the group of expelled ZANU-PF members as former Vice President Joyce Mujuru continues to dither on launching her political party.
That's our broadcast this evening. I'm Marvelous Mplanga Nyahuye.
Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele, hosted by Praxedis Jeremiah. This is Chris Gande wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night, Zimbabwe.